So is that unless they
Love
show that
Talk
they are in
Radio.
imminent danger to themselves or others, you can't.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Thank you.
don't have to get high to get happy. Just think about what's in store. When people start doing what they ought to be doing, and they won't be booing no more. When a president goes to the White House door and does what he says he'll do, well, I'll be drinking free bubble up, eating that rainbow stew. Eating rainbow stew and silver stew, and eat that sky blue. I'll be drinking that free bubble up, eating some rainbow stew. Eating rainbow stew and a silver stew, and eat that sky blue. I'll be drinking that free bubble up, eating some rainbow stew.
Believe it or not, that's an old friend of mine. I met him years ago. I used to play country music for a living. This is your old buddy, Blue Otter, coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the land, the ancient land of the Aniuntikwalaski, the Cherokee protectors, military protectors of the Cherokee Nation, the people of the lightning and thunder. Ralph, are you on the line with me?
Yes, sir, I am, Will.
How do you like? That's a cute song, isn't it? I talk with you tonight.
Oh, man, Rainbow Stew, I love it.
Well, I used to play music, and earlier I was thinking about playing, and maybe on a break or something, if you need to use the facilities, I'll play Robert Robertson's The Lights. But I got to thinking about the content of tonight's show, and I thought, oh, man, that's just perfect. And, well, folks, this is Ralph Ring. Free energy is something that's close to my heart. I have another good friend by the name of Sterling Allen. I don't know if you've heard of Sterling, Ralph. He's got a...
friend of mine.
Oh, yeah. I thought you know him, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Since like 92. He headed up something called the American Study Group in Utah. And then we used to live in the same valley. And I get news from... I'm on his news group. David's Outcasts on Yahoo.com. But, yeah, tell us about your work. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, since this is the first time I've been on your show, I probably should start at the beginning and work up. A lot of the listeners may have heard some of this if they've gone on our website and downloaded some of the videos, but I'll be brief and go through and catch up to where we're at today and what we're doing. And then if there's any questions or anything, don't hesitate, because I get lost sometimes without questions.
So, no problem.
All right, it started for me. Let's see. Well, I was in the service, and I got into infantry. I kept trying to get into engineering, and they put me back in the infantry. And they shipped me eventually over to Guam, and the Korean War broke out, and they transferred me to the 3rd Division. We made the Wonchon landing in North Korea, and that was a real drag. I didn't care much for war and fighting and everything. Very cold. It was 70 degrees below at one time, I remember. So anyway, did a lot of fighting, got wounded a few times, and...
What branch were you in?
I was in the 3rd Division Army, 3rd Division 7th Regimental Combat Team.
Sounded like you went
fancy
on
a name, but it was just a bunch of warriors wanted to fight.
Sounded like you went through a little bit of what the Marines went through at the Chosin Reservoir. That was a mess.
Well, that's what we did. We came in to rescue them because we were the first ones to land, and that was our job to go up and get those guys out because they were surrounded.
Oh,
and
my.
We did. We went up there, and I got lost, and I wound up with frostbite and stuff. But it was a heck of a battle. And they were right down in a foxhole with us. It was not very comfortable at all.
Jeez. Well, thanks for your service.
Oh, well, my pleasure, man. But there's easier ways to solve problems than fighting.
Yes. Wow. You know, That was a mess. You ever see that?
So I got out of the service, and I got back, and I kept putting in for engineering school because, I didn't have much of a background in the way of work. I was a machinist when I was a kid and did a few things here and there. But when I got out, and looked at the paper, they didn't have any jobs for a regimental combat team or a machine gunner or a mortar operator. So I didn't know what the heck to do. But while I was on Guam, I did a lot of diving, skin diving and stuff, and I really, really liked the underwater world. So I figured, well, I'll kind of push the envelope here and put an ad in for if anybody wants a skin diver, I'm available. And I did, and I started getting calls, so I created a little business, Skin Divers Incorporated, San Francisco.
Wow.
And that built up it just built up overnight. And I got into some hard hat diving and stuff. I didn't like that too well, but I stayed with I got into scuba then, and I stayed with the skin diving and scuba diving and rescue, underwater photography, mining.
Wow.
Had quite a bit of repertoire.
I'm old enough to remember Sea Hunt. Most people aren't. Lloyd Bridges.
Well, that's kind of where I got the idea, man.
Wow.
I was watching Sea Hunt one night and I said, well, I can do that. And I put an ad in the paper, and it worked. It went really well. I wound up going up to Northern California and doing underwater gold mining with the guy that wanted to prove his suction dredge. And that was fun. It was pure fun. And I made a little money out of it, too. It was good.
What river were you on?
North Fork of the Trinity. That's where we made our Eureka. We found a lot of gold. And in about a foot and a half foot of water, that's all. We found a crevice.
I met a guy up in Siskiyou County. He owned 1 mile of claim on the river up there. And he was dredging one day, and he had switched to a larger funnel and or a larger dredge nozzle, and he actually got his head stuck in there, and all the way up to the bridge of his nose. Yeah, and luckily the Karuk Nation that day there was a guy doing a rotation who was knew how to do a microsurgery and was a plastic surgeon, put him back together again. But I was up there for about 3 months, and anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead. You had some amazing experiences.
Wow, man, he got his head caught. Well,
yeah.
it gets close sometimes, and
yeah.
You know, you can really get into it, especially if you don't know the currents and what you're doing and stuff.
Oh, well, he was in 30 feet. He wouldn't go any deeper than 30 feet, but he could go for hours and hours and hours. Nobody could believe how long he could go. He and some buddies pulled 1,000 ounces out of a
in summer. That was a little better than what we did.
It was right.
We pulled about 30 ounces out, I think. But
yeah, it was right off of a boat launching area there near Happy Camp. And that's an amazing area up there. And anyway, I didn't mean to get you off on that tangent, but go ahead.
No, that's okay. Well, yeah, I enjoyed the Trinity River. That was where we chose to dive, and then we got the North Fork of the Trinity and started climbing up in through there and met a couple of old timers, Maggie, and what the heck was his name? They were prospectors from the old times, and they were showing us where to go get gold, you know, and this made our journey a lot easier by having them guide us around a little bit. But anyway, long story short, I got going on different projects. Almost killed myself in San Francisco Bay. They wanted a diver to dive for this it was an adapter that they dropped off one of their freighters, dropped it down in about 100 feet of water. No, it couldn't have been 100. It was in San Francisco Bay, but I think it was down about 10 feet of water and 20 feet of mud.
Jeez.
And I had to go diving down there to try and find it for them. And they hired me. And I didn't ask for very much. I was just starting the business, and I didn't even know what to charge these guys. But anyway, I dove down, and I spent about an hour down there fishing around and kept going deeper and deeper into the mud, and I finally found that sucker, and it was just I only had a few breaths of air left, so I just threw a half hitch around it, and luckily it caught, and I jerked the rope for him to pull it up slow, and I got the heck out of the water. But I was trying to get up, and there's what they call camels. They're big logs right next to the pier that keep the boats from bumping into the pier, and I got stuck underneath the camels, and I ran out of air.
Oh. What were you trying to salvage?
It was an adapter with handles on it. It fitted their onboard tube to the landline tube.
I mean, oh, I see. Wow.
Transfer something. I don't even know what it was for.
So did you die?
Oh yeah, I died and came back. I'm not finished here yet. So anyway, I went up to get my pay, and they paid me. You know, they gave me, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars, I guess. And they said, one guy pulled me aside. He said, well, you're paid now, but I tell you, we would have paid you $10,000 to rescue that thing. It was costing like $20,000 or $30,000 to keep that thing tied up there every day.
Wow.
So anyway, I was learning about money then.
Yeah, I've got a friend.
And, well, anyway, I'll cut it short. I went down to Southern California. I worked my way down the coast. I went into Santa Barbara for a while. My sister lived there, and I started diving abalone just for the heck of it. The abalone diving was kind of fun. And then I worked my way down to Newport Beach. My uncle lived down there. And I was out diving, just doing my work, doing my thing. And one day, a dive boat from U.S. Divers, that's the Aqualung company that Jacques Cousteau created, a dive boat pulled up and heard about my daring dives. They were daring because I understood natural law and understood what I could do, and I didn't have much fear when I knew my limits. So, but it sounded pretty good to me. They said, you know, that they wanted me to come in for an interview. They'd like me to talk to them about about their research and development facility. So I did. I went in, and they hired me right away.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And well, I got involved with that.
I lived in Newport Beach between 65 and 67.
Beg pardon?
I lived in Newport Beach between 65 and 67.
Wow. Okay, well, you know the area.
Yeah.
Now you can't touch that thing with...
What years were you in?
I was there in 55, 6.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wasn't much there then. Yeah, it's... let's see. Was that before or after the big Boy Scout Jamboree? They had, I can't remember what year they had the World Jamboree in Newport Beach. And they had it on a bluff that they later turned into a subdivision called East Bluff. And when my parents put in the first lawn there, we discovered there's three campfires there that we had to put lawn over. So I know the area real well. It's beautiful.
Wow. Yeah, it was at one time. I haven't been back recently, but I've heard it was pretty crowded. And stuff. But anyway, I got Marsha's flashing me a note here. Let me see. What do you got? Oh, talk about spaceship and consciousness. I'll get that.
Yeah.
Well, Marsha's here too, by the way, Will. I want to introduce you to my wife, Marsha.
Hello there.
Hey, how are you doing? You got to keep us on task. That's the
yeah, yeah. Well, he has such a good story, and I know that people are really interested in hearing it, Will. And that's why I want him, you know, the fun things are fun too, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get on with it. We're just finding out. I got a lot more in common with him than I thought.
It's amazing that he said he knew you before, so that's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think he's been a member of the Native Prophecy Council. He may have even been the first one.
We go back a ways. Well, I remember.
Like,
anyway, I got to work for divers, and that was going pretty well. But I was going out to the islands, Catalina, and so forth, and testing equipment, and had a couple of. They weren't dangerous to me, but when the word got back to my wife, I had a couple of incidences. Ran out of air at 250 feet, and to a diver, that's nothing because you can. And I was only down there less than 5 minutes, so I didn't have to hang off. And I just came up, blowing my air out, blowing my lungs out, and I was nothing to it for me. But when the word got back to my wife, I was raising kids then too. I had two kids.
Oh wow.
She said, you know, we need a papa around the house and somebody to take the trash out. You guys are out there, you know, 2 and 3 days, sometimes a week. So I kind of ignored her for a while because I was making pretty good money and taking care of things. But a couple of more little incidents, we got caught in a storm out there and capsized the boat and stuff. And so she got a little nervous. And one day when I was having breakfast, having my cornflakes, and she put a classified ad over my top of my cornflakes, circle and lipstick. And it was a job offer for a lab tech at a research and development center right about 2 or 3 blocks from my house. I lived in Costa Mesa at that time.
Uh-huh. I went to Orange Coast College, so.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
You know, I took marine biology and oceanography there.
Did you ever meet a guy by the name of... John Zeldis, he's a oceanographer. He and I went to Franklin Elementary School in Santa Monica, like in 60, 61, 62, and we used to play together all the time. And I found out anyway, I just was curious. I think he's in New Zealand now. Anyway.
I might have known him, but God, man, a million names and faces sometimes don't match up. I know their energy when I feel them again, but it doesn't ring a bell right now. But anyhow, I took some courses at Orange Coast, and then I went to Irvine and took a course in zoology, and I don't know, I got mixed up in different things. But that's when I thought my career was going to be diving. And one day I looked at the bulletin board at Orange Coast, and they said they want a marine biologist, and they pay him $500 a month. And at that time, I'd started a little house cleaning business, and I was making $500 a week. So I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to go much further with this, because I think on my own I can probably do okay without getting tied up in an organization or a system or a corporate structure of any kind. So I kind of went off on my own doing things, like I did with the diving. And anyway, I told my wife, well, I don't have any experience. I'm a diver, and that's just about it. In my spare time, I was going around to garage sales and swap meets, and I gathered up all kinds of stuff, and I was experimenting. I used my living room floor was better than my garage. My garage was small, but I had some tools out there I could work with. But I'd always put ideas together and make them work around the house. So she thought, well, that'll qualify. You know natural law, because I was raised up here where I am now. I'm in Paradise, California. And I was raised up here. I was here in the 40s. And I went, my sister and I walked back and forth to school, 7 miles round trip. So my best knowledge and wisdom and understanding of life came from walking in the woods. I learned about natural law. So everything I put together was based on natural law, just down-earth simplicity. Just everything in nature is really, really simple. So I was running these things around the house on remotes and everything, and she said, well, you go down there and tell them what you can do, see what happens. So I did. I went down there. It was lunchtime. There was nobody. The receptionist wasn't there, and I walked down the halls, and I couldn't see anybody, so I was getting ready to leave, and I walked by the director's office, and he saw me. He said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm looking for a job. And he said, well, you have to come back there at lunch or something. I said, okay, see ya. I was ready to get out of there, and he said, well, wait a minute. What are you looking for? And I said, well, you got this ad here for a lab tech. And he said, well, what's your qualifications? I said, well, natural law. And he said, well, what are you talking about? Well, I went in to explain to him a few natural principles that rock the boat of conventional physics. And so he thought, and especially when I told him my interest has always been in magnetics, and that I love magnetism, and that I learned a lot about, you know, how things are put together. So that kind of struck a chord with him, because an engineer that had been working on a magnetic experiment for him just quit, and they needed to fill the job right away. So without an application or anything, he says, he called one of his engineers up to guide me into the area that the experiment was going on, and he says, you can fill out an application tomorrow or something, but let him show you what we're doing here. Well, what they were doing was, the job was to fire an electron through a magnetic field without deflection. It couldn't go to the positive or negative. It had to go through the field. And I looked at it, and I thought, well, it sounds simple to me. And they gave me $40,000 oscilloscope and an equally expensive Xerox, not a Xerox, but a, what did I say, oscilloscope, and Xerox camera. And they said, all you have to do is keep firing those electrons and writing them up and taking pictures. And I said, well, that's simple, not much to this job at all. But after a few days, I worked there a couple of weeks before I got really tired of it. I said, well, wait a minute. These guys are trying to force this little electron and through this field, and they're never going to do that. They're pushing the envelope with Mother Nature, and you can't do that. You got to give her a chance to breathe. Everything breathes. We breathe in and out, and the oceans go in and out, and, you know, everything is going ebbing and flowing. So that's a simple law of nature. So I told them, I said, you know, you're really not going to go anywhere forcing these little electrons through here. And they said, no, just be quiet and keep doing it. We'll just keep increasing the power and just keep doing your job. Well, I saw that this wasn't going to go anywhere. And so I was getting upset, and in my head I said, oh, I can do this. It's a simple project. And the next bench over, they're working on levitation. And what they had was these coils, 6-inch iron cores with, you know, copper wire wrapped around them, just coils. And then they fired them up and levitated a steel ball for about 4 or 5 minutes and then burnt the coil up. And another stupid way to go, I thought, because, it, you know, they're using force again, and they're trying to buck the resistance that the coil's trying to give them. So anyway, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to go home and work on this. I went home and tore apart an old TV set, got the cathode ray tube out of it, and set the magnets, and set up a similar experiment right on my living room floor. Not much to it at all. And my hunch was, because I watched how water comes down the rivers from the snow and everything, it meanders. It doesn't go in a straight line. It's not captivated by man's aqueducts and so forth as they do on down the line later. But when I was into gold, I understood how the flows of water were very important. There are eddy currents and there are vortices. They spiral, and that's how nature breathes and everything that nature puts together. So I said, well, I'll just spiral this little baby through here, and it's called pulsing in the vernacular science. They call it pulsing the signal. So I just pulsed the signal, and this little electron, the first one I shot, went through the field because it was spiraling. It was having a chance in its own dimension to breathe, and it went right through the field, no deflection. So after about 20 of them, I said, I got it. I'm going to write this up, take some pictures, and I'm going to look for a big raise. I solved their problem in a hurry. And I'm just a lab tech, so I knew they could pass it on to their engineers and their physicists and figure it out from there. But, you know, the idea that I used was just being patient, just pulsing the signal instead of trying to force it. So along with that, I said, well, it's a weekend, and I'll work on this other levitation thing. And the same television, I believe, or maybe the music box, I pulled this 15-inch woofer speaker out and put it on the living room floor, magnetic base to it, and hooked up a little audio amplifier I picked up at a garage sale for about $25. And I was just playing around, you know, sending in different vibrations to this cone. And it's just like music, the cone would vibrate and everything. And what I was working, basing my hunch on, I'd watched an 8mm film way back somewhere. I don't even know where I watched the thing. I was in Tibet. The Tibetans were raising these huge blocks of stone up the side of this cliff. And they had these long horns and around these rocks and guys with drums. And all they do was play the horns and the drums till they reached a resonant frequency, as I know it as of today, of the stone. And it nullified the magnetic field of the gravity around the stone. And sure enough, they'd pull it up the side of the hill and say, well,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, my friend Robert Threagle, you know, Robert Shrewsbury is an old friend of mine, and also known as Robert Threagle. And this guy, in the 10 years, the 10 or 15 years that we were living in the same place, he got into metallurgy and he built a nuclear resonance magnetometer. And there's a lot of these machines around, but he was able to figure out that resonant frequencies change slightly depending on the phase of the moon. And the Torah, he was reading in the Torah how after the flood it said that the moon would be in control of things. And so he did a spreadsheet. This guy gets $1,000 a day to go out, and if you don't find what you're looking for, he didn't get it paid, but he did 6 trips back and forth between Birmingham, Alabama, and where he lives in Utah last year. And he's putting together a deal with a group in Florida right now. And resident magnetic resonance is amazing. And but this he taught me a very rudimentary method of just using a strong magnet. And he says basically, mm-hmm. if you have a sample of whatever you're looking for, you just place. He said just put the magnet down on a table. It has to be wood, you know, not metal. And he says mm-hmm. put a pure sample of whatever you're looking for on the. I believe he said the north pole of the magnet, and then you stand between. Whatever you're looking for, where the approximate area where you think you're looking for it, but you have mm-hmm. to be in its field. And he just uses a dowsing antenna. And I was in a friend of mine's house in Colorado, and this guy legally grew marijuana. And I said, Jimmy, I said, you know, give me a little bud. And I said, I want you to blindfold me. I said, I'm going to put earplugs in, and I said, I want you to hide some, you know, here in the room. And I said, I'll find it. He just laughed, and he, oh, no, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. And I said, no. And I said, you know, I said, I'll even go la, 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 while, so I don't even hear your footfalls. I don't want any clue. But anyway, I placed that little bud on top of that, on that magnet. I turned around, and I walked right over to it. Absolutely amazing, and well, that's a rudimentary way. But if you have
that's the simple law of nature. If you mm-hmm. resonate with anything, and if you don't have any fear, if you got fear, it'll slow you down because you're guessing all the time. You're doubting and fearing, and that's what
an MRI is. A magnetic resonance machine. You've got frequency talking to frequency at a distance, and it's used in medicine all the time, and that's what. Oil companies are using to image underneath the ground. All Robert has to do is just stick a couple of spikes in the ground and broadcast the resonant frequency of whatever element he's looking for, or a cord of four elements. And he does that for about 45 minutes. He just turns on his machine and goes and finds it. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Cool. That's cool. I'm glad that, you know, that's coming to the surface fast now, because we need it. We need to get into that kind of stuff, because they've been so far behind, and they've really shelved a lot of things, hidden a lot of things from people, and it's except for their own best interest, they've done a lot of that too with it.
Yeah.
But now it's got to come out, and that's what Marsh and I are trying to do is we go around on lectures. We've been all over the United States and in Hawaii and stuff, and just waking people up, just tell them, hey, know who you are, know who you really are, not who you think you are and stuff. And it's kind of shaking their cage a little bit, you know, but it's working. People are starting to question themselves now, find out who they are. It's kind of cool. But anyway, getting back to story, if you like. if you like. Hello?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. The only other thing I was going to say is Sterling Allen recently came back from South Africa with a machine, and it looks like they're going to have marketable home energy units coming up, and around $5,000, something like that. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's beautiful. Yeah. I try to keep up with him. I got his website, and I try to keep up on freeenergy.com. And I notice he's doing – that guy, God bless him. He's bringing out information daily for people to look at and showing the little guys working in their garages trying to get these ideas out to people. Well, anyway, so let's see. Where was I? I was talking about I'm stuck way back on the job, aren't I? Well, I wrote that. I played around with it till I found a ping pong ball, and I put that in the center of the cone, and bingo, I hit the right vibrations and suspended the ping pong ball in the center of this 15-inch woofer speaker, and the whole job must have cost me $30 or something. I don't know. So I said, well, there goes that one. I'll look around the lab and see if there's any others I can put my ideas to. And so I wrote it up, took pictures of it, and I thought I was really going to get a nice raise. So I walked in and got an audience with Dr. Weinhardt, and I said, guess what? I think I'm on to something. I know I don't know much. I'm just a lab tech, but turn these over to the engineers. I think we got something we can work on here. He said, what you got? And I showed him. He looked at the pictures and read the report. And he says, Ralph, I'm a physicist, and I see where you're going with this, but, we're not there yet. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, where you're working here, this is advanced kinetics. We're connected with government funding. We get grants to do our job here. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he says, well, you don't understand. In government funding, you're paid to look for the answers, not find them. And that's the words he told me. And I that my whole world changed. And that just 5 seconds, my whole world, my stomach dropped. I didn't know where I was at. Like, where in the hell am I? I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But he said, no, that's the way it is. He says, I'm kind of sorry you discovered that, because I don't want you talking to any of the engineers about this. I'm going to have to shred this. You go back to work, we'll put some more money in your envelope, but don't you dare, not a word of this to anybody else. And I said, well, I thought we were here to progress. And he said, no, we're here to make money. So that was the beginning of the end of that job. About 2 weeks later, I had to walk off. In fact, I was crying when I went out the door, because I thought, man, you guys are missing it. You're working on laws that they're just going to chase your tail all your lives. You're not going to go anywhere. And I was mostly crying because I had to go home and face my wife and my kids. I just quit my job. So anyway, long story short, on my way home, I met one of my neighbors, and he was telling me about, I was telling him the whole story, and he says, well, man, those ideas are not bad at all. There's a lot of people that want to do those things, but they're kind of held under the pressure of the ideas that you can't and you won't and you don't and stuff. But they have a meeting once a week, and it's called Understanding. It was held there in Costa Mesa. And the guy that put it together was Daniel Pry. And he said, why don't you come on over? I'll go with you. Come on over one of these nights and tell them what you told me. Because you'll find other people doing the same things in their own field. They're working in their garages and underneath their carports and stuff, putting things together. So I was okay. So I went over, and what a nice bunch of people. I mean, they were open-minded. I couldn't believe it. Because they listened to my story and said, yeah, we know exactly where you're at, and we know how you're feeling and everything, and we've gone through a lot of this stuff ourselves. But tell us more. And I said, well, since I've been a kid, I come out of the woods to see what this world out here was like, and I couldn't I could hardly, I mean, it was just totally different because everything was going backwards, going in the wrong direction as far as I was concerned. And I was just a kid, but, and they said, what are you talking about? I said, well, if you look at the clouds, and I was just using an example, but I said, you look at the clouds, well, you look at a clear sky first, and then you see these little vapors coming together and forming, formulating into clouds, and pretty soon more and more clouds, and pretty soon you got rain, and not just for 5 or 10 minutes, but sometimes for 5 and 10 days. Now, that's a lot of water being suspended up above our heads, and I mean hundreds and hundreds of tons, hundreds of thousands of tons are being held up there in natural, simple levitation.
Hmm.
And that's magnetic resonance. And that's how nature operates. When the plants need water, they just signal, okay, I'm ready. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's a little more detailed than that. But that's basically what happens. So I said, and so I wanted to see floating homes. I thought, well, why don't we get these tires off the ground, all this pavement and cement and asphalt and rubber, and let's get it back to the garden, because I saw them tear up some beautiful parks just to put a freeway in. And I thought, man, let's just get that tire from the vertical position, get it into a horizontal position. Let's have floating homes, and using magnetic power, using magnetism. It's really simpler than it sounds. And so they said, well, tell us a little more. I said, well, it's just like RVs in the sky. Let's get out of the Flintstone era and get into the Jetson era. And they said, well, you mean like a spaceship? I said, yeah. Yeah, we could have floating homes, floating cities, floating countries, anything we want. We're on a spaceship right now. And I spent some time in Washington, northern part of Washington. Well, it's around Seattle, but I met Bucky Fuller up there.
Really?
And he was always talking, you know, geometry and then sacred geometry, and about the fact that we're on a spaceship. This is just one gigantic spaceship. And so I thought, well, cool, let's bring that principle down and get things off the ground so we can move around without a lot of congestion and stuff. And I knew with magnetism, you don't have to bump into anybody, so that's not going to be any accidents to worry about. So they said, well, you don't sound strange to us. We know a guy in Oklahoma who's working in Norman, Oklahoma right now. His name is Otis Carr, and he was a direct disciple of Nikola Tesla. He
wow.
met Tesla working as a night clerk in the New Yorker Hotel and became friends with him. Tesla would send him out for peanuts and food sometimes. But Carr was a sponge. He was basically a science-oriented person, and like myself, he liked natural law. And Tesla was really adamant about sharing things with Carr, because he was an open mind. He didn't resist anything, and he was receptive. And Tesla told him the story that he'd gone so far with the Edison Company and the Westinghouse, that was funded all by J.P. Morgan, they had the money man at the time, and they'd gone so far as to fund his operations in Colorado Springs. He had a
mm-hmm. They made a movie about
lab
it.
There, huh? And also on the north edge of Manhattan, New Jersey, it's
mm-hmm.
called Warden Cliff, I believe is the name of it. He was going to build this tower, and at the time, J.P. Morgan wasn't too worried about it until Tesla came in and said, we're ready to transmit electricity through the air without wires. We no longer need wires. They're going to be obsolete. And that blew, I'm paraphrasing everything, and I'm metaphoring everything because I wasn't there, but It blew his fuse, blew J.P. Morgan's fuse, because he said, no, man, you can't do that. You're going to put everybody out of business. You know, we got the lumber industry. We need to cut those logs down and build telephone poles, and we need to dig holes in the ground and get the copper and make wire and transmit this electricity and then put meters on it so people can be comfortable in their homes and pay us lots of money. He didn't say that, but so Carr said, no, we don't need that. We can transmit electrical power, what you're calling electrical power, through the earth, around the ionosphere, bounce a signal all around the earth and give everybody free and abundant energy forever, because we're living in a big ocean of energy, big sea of energy. And long story short, J.P. Morgan told Tesla, no, and we're going to have to stop you from going any further with this. So they went in and tore his tower down in Manhattan. And before they could tear his place down in Colorado Springs, he was able to transmit power all over the place. He had light bulbs, you know, miles away. He was lighting up from the Tesla coils that he produced. So, but anyway, they basically shut him down. And he transmitted all this information to Carr, and he says, they don't want me to operate anymore. They're locking me in a box. So you take this information, I'll give you everything I can, and you pass it on, because this eventually, sooner or later, they're digging their own grave. They're on their way to extinction, and you're going to have to take this and run with it and see what you can do. And if you can't do it, pass it on, because we've got to wake people up to getting back to natural law, getting back to the simple laws of nature, because the way they're going is they're chasing their tails, and they're building things stronger and stronger with force, and they're killing themselves. So long story short, Carr said, go, I'll do this. And so he already had his own small laboratory, but eventually he started OTC Lab Incorporated in Baltimore, Maryland, and started designing and building alternative energies. But his pet, he always wanted to build spaceships. So he started developing the Tesla technology that enabled him to understand how simple it was. Started putting these things together, but the powers that be in those days, which was the power companies and the lumber industries or whoever they happened to be, didn't really want him to be around. So they gave him a hard time everywhere he went. They were giving him a hard time. And so the understanding group that was telling me all this said, he's out there now, but he's under a lot of pressure. They're calling him a fraud that he doesn't know what he's talking about and so forth. So you guys sound like you're talking about the same thing. How would you like to get together? And I said, oh, man, I'd love it. So within a week, they got it all together. I don't know, it was a big miracle as far as I was concerned, because I didn't know how it was all going to happen. But they gave me a call, and they said, Carr's on his way with his entourage. He's got about, you know, six or eight. He's got engineers and physicists and PR people and stuff, but he's on his way. And we're going to put you guys up at Lake Arrowhead. We got a huge cabin up there, and you guys can stay up there till we figure out. We'll just turn it over to Spirit and find you a place to work. So that's cool. So they set him out, and I met him. And when I met him, man, it was like shaking hands with destiny, because him and I were natural law from the get-go. We just understood. We just looked in each other's eyes, and we knew that what was around us wasn't real compared to what we knew could be. And he said, you ready to go with us? I said, yeah, let's go. So we went up to the cabin. I got acquainted with all the other guys, the engineers and stuff. And they were pretty knowledgeable, and they had the spirit of adventure, the spirit of ideas, and the spirit of actually going completely immersed, getting completely immersed in free energy. So, but I'd
Car. I'll remember.
Go ahead, Will.
But
I'm blabbing away here. I'm just.
I'll remember where you were about being completely immersed in free energy. I really wish. See, my dad graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1939 in civil engineering.
Wow.
And he had like a 55, 60-year career. I mean, when he passed away, he was living in Oak Ridge. But he always regretted that he was a company man, and he had that fear. He didn't want to break up. But he ran a division for Donald Douglas in the early 60s, and he's worked. They wouldn't take him in the Army in World War II because he was too skinny. But he escorted. He was working in Wichita for Boeing, and they wanted him to escort the prototype for the magnesium nose casting for the B-29 bomber to Wright Patt. And he told me about things like a certain hangar that he saw a certain disc in, and he spent so much time up at Apple Valley that they call him the mayor of Apple Valley, and he saw a lot of things. He had a Q clearance, and he told me about seeing levitation experiments. He was fascinated with high speed trains that ran on magnetic, rails, his brother graduated from the Naval Academy in 1945, and he was a lifelong, and they called him Mr. Sonobui. He invented and ran SOSIS, you saw Hunt for Red October, until he retired in 1980, I know where you're coming from. And Dad just had this hunger. He was afraid, he had a family, and he was afraid to kind of break out of the mold, and boy, I wished he would have hooked up with you.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Oh, man. Well, I wish you had too.
Because he knew stress analysis. Well, he chased, we lived in Newport Beach from 65 to 67, and I guess Johnson pulled the plug on aerospace, and then we went to Martin Marietta in Orlando and worked on Nike Zeus until that was over with, and then we moved up to Long Island, and he was working at Bethpage for Grumman. They did the trajectory analysis for Voyager, the Grand Tour. And then, the space program was over there for a while, so he got into manufactured housing for a few years. But by 72, he was back in California working for Garrett Air Research, and I worked for them till he retired and eventually moved back to Oak Ridge and back to California and back to Oak Ridge where they were. His first job was in Clinton, Tennessee, and he wanted to retire here. And I met my mom down in Mississippi. Her dad worked for the Corps of Engineers. So, yeah, engineering runs in my blood, But I couldn't. I scored highest on SATs in physical science, but I never could wrap my head around calculus. I was good in math, and my uncle, you know, being a gunnery officer, first thing he did in World War II. He says they don't. He says the teachers don't teach the application for calculus. And you know, about that time, all that movie about those kids in West Virginia. What was it called? October. About them, you know, designing a rocket, and they had to prove that they didn't start a fire, and so they used calculus to go and figure out exactly where the trajectory or where it would have landed, and they ended up in the space program. But it was just
was that David Adair? You know who David Adair is?
I think so.
He was 7 years old. He understood quantum physics.
Yeah.
And at 13, he was building rockets and out in the cow pasture.
His dad was a miner, and they lived in a company town in West Virginia. They made a movie called October. I just can't think about it right now. And I've always been fascinated with the subject, and I've had a lot of UFO experiences. So I'll shut up. Go back, you know, you were talking about...
Well, don't
you know,
shut up.
Becoming
no, but to well, tie in with that, and this might be, you know, good for your radio audience if they haven't heard of him, just go to the Internet and type in David Adair, and it'll lead you right to a website. Or go to our website, go up to BlueStarEnterprise.com, and he's on our front page right now. And this kid from... he was born with nature coming out of his ears, and so he designed and built these rockets, and they got onto him and wanted him to. They took him to Wright-Patterson, and I don't know. They wanted him to shoot these rockets over to Area 51. But it's an interesting story, and it goes into the etheric realms of who and what we are and what kind of energy we're dealing with. And it's a real. I won't get into it more than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a video. David Adair at Area 51. Yeah. It's a picture of a U.S. Air Force security guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it in a uniform with a on the front with a spaceship in the back or something.
I've heard him talk on Coast to Coast years ago. He's amazing.
Oh, okay.
Amazing
person. Yeah. There's a lot of guys like that. They've cut loose and they're their own.
Well, he was like
self-made 16. Person, you know.
Yeah, he was like 16 years old. He went to work for the government. He was just, if that's a guy I'm thinking about, yeah.
17 years old. He flew his rocket faster than the speed of a bullet over to Area 51. I think it was like thousands of miles an hour. I don't know what it was, but
well, my Cherokee teacher John Red Hat was Colonel John Duke. And he spent 30 years in the Air Force. He was a 06 full bird colonel when he retired. He was a traditional Cherokee teacher, and you can read about him at Ketua Society, KETOOWAH Society.org. And he told me he did.
What was that again? Let me write it down. What was that again?
KEETOOWAH Society.org. John Red Hat is a Air Force officer. He told me that he did. He flew a F-111 Starfighter with a test plane with iridium skin. You know, he lived around Colorado Springs. You know, he was attached to NORAD there, and they pulled him out of retirement. He was born and raised a traditional Cherokee. By Cherokee-speaking grandmothers and black freed woman, and got involved in the Air Force. And he, as a teen, he converted to Judaism and became a rabbi. And so they pulled him out of retirement during Desert Storm to be the U.S. Air Force liaison with the IDF Air Force and. And he saw things. They showed him things. They've got weapons that nobody that you know you don't know about. They showed him some things. They said, "Go home and tell your government we've got five of these." And I'll tell you off the air. You know, he's dead now, but they could come after me. But anyway, it's so exciting. But there's so much suppression. They suppress everything, and I think everybody knows that. You know, there's carburetors out there that could get 100 miles a gallon. And everybody's the powers that be are just so greedy. They want people chained. It's such a shame. But you were talking about being totally immersed in the culture.
It's really a world of servitude. You know, they have the few that are controlling and powering over the many, and that's got to change. Marsha's grabbing the phone. Hang on.
You know what's exciting to me is that now's the time. It is changing, and we're hearing so many and getting so many people coming in touch with us. College students that are saying we're interested in what you're doing, and there's so many little inventors all over that we're in touch with, and it's happening now, and so that's we're really blessed to be at in this life at this time, because we're going to see the whole universe, the whole multiverse change in the next few, you know, months, I hope. But it might take a year or so, but it's happening now. And that's what's so exciting. I'm very happy to be part of this natural energy phenomena.
Well, I'll bet Ralph's glad to see it, you know, particularly, you know, after a lifetime. And I don't know how old he is. I imagine he's, you know, he's probably born about 1920. What year was Ralph born in?
I was born in 34. I'm a double seven right now.
Oh, okay, 34. So you're like 78.
Coming up 78. Yeah.
And boy, I'll bet you're glad to see something finally happening after all. you know,
yeah, man. Well,
after Star Trek, X-Files, and things finally cutting loose.
Yeah, we've reached critical mass. It's a downhill from here on, but it won't seem like it to a lot of people that haven't, you know, gone to their source for their information. If they're outside looking for answers, they're never going to find them, because it's the old squirrel cage, round and around, the same old dumb answers that they get.
Well, what do you think about Michio Kaku went public months ago? He said, you know, we made a mistake in our mathematics, and he says there's a bigger problem with the sun than we thought, and.
They
expect something could possibly happen in 2012, and of course, their prophecy talks about, you know, about problems with the sun, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens between now and the end of the year, because you know, the Mayan elders I interviewed, they said, you know, nothing's written in stone, but something is going to happen, and there will be changes, and. But if we can live through it peacefully until we can, you know, go from a level zero civilization to at least a level one, you know, like Professor Kaku was talking about. I listen to his show every Saturday night and on the local talk show, and he always has some good guests. And but anyway, go ahead. You were talking about getting totally immersed in.
Well, that reminds me. I don't know whether Marsha and I are both good friends with the Hopi and the Navajo, and we've been back and forth. And just recently, a guy that was writing a book, what was his name? Gary David.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wrote some books, but I'm not 100% clear on all the accuracy of the book. But anyway, one of the things he did was go up to Hopi land and. And Grandfather Martin took him out to a prophecy rock, and there etched on that rock thousands of years ago was the OTCX1. That's the craft that we're building now, is the OTCX1. And you can see it carved into the rock. It's on our website. I believe people can plug in and take a look at it.
And when you get to that point, we're talking about the OTC ship, my friend Mark... Burcheting wanted to ask you, why do you think the color aquamarine was being emitted by the crystals or whatever in the center of the OTC ship that you wrote in? But we'll shelve that till you actually get to start talking about it.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a little brief now, and then we'll come right on up to full bore, and I'll give you the whole peanut.
Sure.
Aquamarine, I didn't know it at the time. And then the engineers just went out and measured a piece of land, and it just happened to be, when they measured it with light frequencies and vibrations, to equate to the in the colors in the light spectrum of aquamarine. And that's how that was. I didn't think anything more about it until somebody had seen it on our web. I did an interview for Project Camelot years ago, and somebody had heard about it, and they wrote us an email about aquamarine. It really shocked me. It's supposed to be one of the transitional light, the frequencies of aquamarine are incredibly powerful. And they are deal with transition from one dimension to another, making that entirely possible very easily. And to be able to ascend in your consciousness to higher levels of understanding and so forth. So, and much more. Marcia, do you remember any more about that, what we got on it?
Well, the actual email that came to us about it said that they definitely had heard us speak, and there was absolutely no doubt in their minds that the aquamarine was the higher vibration of transition, and that would be for now too. But and they went on to explain the meaning of it, and I don't have it right here in my head right now, but it really resonated with Ralph, and it sounded very beautiful to me too.
It goes through quartz crystal very, very purely. I mean, it doesn't get snagged and sidetracked.
I think I got you.
For some reason, the frequency of aquamarine goes through quartz just like now. So
I think I got you ahead of the thing you were talking about. Just getting in with okay. the engineering group with Otis Carr, and
let's get back to that. So we sat up and talked all night long, and he was explaining to me about what he was doing with Spacious, and I, you know, explained to him that I wanted to see RVs in the sky. Let's get them off the ground. So he says, "Okay, let's work together." But it had to be from that point on. A spiritual venture could no longer be, you know, held just only to a third-dimensional conception of what life was and so forth. So we got into some heavy talk about who we are and what we are, and we are actually light beings. We're energy beings, and we're here for a visit. We were here to try a machine out to see how we could operate through a machine, a water vessel or whatever, and don't get stuck here. But so in order to evolve the species, the races, we would have to keep our head above the clouds and keep operating in what he termed the ethers, that everything from that point on had to come from the ethers and no longer atmosphere and stratosphere and all the other spheres that are talked about in man science. But the ethers deals with etheric energy that is far and above. It's just pure in its essence. So I said, "Cool, teach me." Well, I knew a little bit about it. I'd studied esoteric things and stuff, so I was kind of on the same page with him. So anyway, a week later or so, they gave us a call and they said, "We got you a factory, a facility, including a factory, workshop. We had a machine shop, a tool and die laboratory, barracks, had offices. It had the works." And we thought, "Wow, man, nature's coming with us. We're being met with..." We created a vacuum by saying we're going to do this, and we're not taking no for an answer. We're going to bring free energy back, because it's always been free and abundant. And then along came the ideas that, "Well, man, we can put meters on this and make money, and we'll feed the poor, we'll feed the
right,
the left." But they never have. You know,
the road to hell is reminds me of that Leonard Cohen song. The line is, "This is not a technological problem. This is the road to hell." Okay. So
yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. So they said, and this is down the backside of where we were. We were at Lake Arrowhead, and the backside of that is the San Bernardino Valley, and a place called Hesperia. It's out of Apple Valley next to Victorville, I think it is. And I said, we got you the facilities. Guys, boys can go down and go to work. Let's see some spaceships. So more or less, I'm kind of paraphrasing everything and kind of ad-libbing here, but basically that's what happened. But before we went down, Carr made sure that consciousness was our main objective. Every morning when we got up, we had to see the world as beautiful, and then we had to get the rest of the world to see it as beautiful so we could all experience living in a world without fear and without doubts and without, just being who and what they are and pursuing their own talents, whatever that might be, and not worried about punching a time clock and I can't, I won't, I don't.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Well, I cannot even imagine. And just for example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right. So where do you get the energy? Seriously. I mean, look at you.
Well,
I mean, we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old. And they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have
to
be on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters. And we get along great, 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah, but I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because
well,
you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's typical because we're both type A. And you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
All the other things that went with it. I said, okay, I'm with you. So we went down. They got this facility. Beautiful facility. It's just only on about an acre of land. But, well, we set up shop, and he brought a lot of things with him, but we started, and I was a machinist when I was a kid, so I said, well, I'll help you guys turn out some parts if you want. So I did that, and I was a little bit of a gopher boy because I'd go for hamburgers and stuff when the guys needed it. But I was intrigued with this ether technology that it is. He's talking about, and that came directly from Tesla. Tesla said that they came into this world in spirit, and the only way they're ever going to get out of it is in spirit, because the body, what they're calling the body, it doesn't really exist, but they don't know that. You know, talk like that. But I got used to it. People think I'm nuts.
he must have been a Hank Williams fan. You'll never get out of this world alive.
yeah. You got it. So we went down. We started building these little prototypes. And I was surprised how fast we built them, but he was building them before, so it wasn't much till we had these little models. In those days, we didn't have remotes. We didn't have, little remote airplane motors and stuff that you could use a remote with. But we had these little crafts flying all over Apple Valley. And sometimes the corona around them would shine really bright, and people thought they were flying saucers. And so
they were.
Yeah, well, I guess they were.
Ah, there's the Apple Valley. Okay, yeah, see, my dad was up there. He says, I couldn't tell you what I'm doing. So he was up there with you. His name was Les Anderson.
Ah, Les Anderson, huh?
And he would have been. Yeah, you may have run into him. He was. He told me about, you know, a little. He's, I can't tell you, but he says it's. He says we're doing all kinds of stuff up there with levitation, and there was a lot of strange stuff going on up there.
God, he was probably one of us, and I didn't know it. I don't remember any of the guys' names or anything now, but and they were all just great people. But boy, they were knowledgeable, man. They knew their stuff and everything we were working with. And we all synergized. We all resonated with. We all loved what we were doing. And we'd stay up. We'd go to sleep on the job. I remember going to sleep on the engine lathe a couple of times, just catnapping, waking up, and going back to work, because I was intrigued with this whole idea of building spaceships. So we got these prototypes going around the valley, and they were going good. And we got to a point where Carr called this TR guy, and he's a friend of ours. His name was Major Wayne Aho. He was in the intelligence in the Army. And I guess it was Project Blue Book or one of those things. And he finally quit. He got out of the service because people are being lied to. They won't allow me to talk about the stuff that's been going on. He says, I can't do that. So he got out of the service and he hooked up with Carr, and he was our PR man. And when we had a prototype ready to go, Carr said, well, let's find a manufacturer. We've gone as far as we can go. And we were working, for the most part, out of pocket. We had few donations here and there, but we were doing everything ourselves. We couldn't afford to manufacture these things. So we called in General Motors. And they sent a rep out to talk to us in Riverside. We met at one of the places in Riverside. And they had their engineers with them. They had two or three engineers and the physicist and I don't know who all. And they had their cameras and everything. And we just went with a little suitcase. That's all we had. And I went with those two. There was Wayne Aho and two or three engineers, myself and Carr. And we just had a little suitcase with one of our prototypes in it. And so we walked in, and he says, oh, what do you want to talk about? And we said, well, we really, you know, we want to tell you something before we show you something. And so we explained that we could now, you know, take the next step in evolution. We can go to the next step quite easily, and we don't have to do it drastically. We could gradually fade it in with what's happening if we don't wait too long. Otherwise, it can be really drastic if you have to wait till the last minute. But he said, well, what are you talking about? Well, you know, the Amos still have horses, and they're happy with them, horse and carriages. And people still have their Corvettes and Maseratis or whatever they want, and they're happy with them. And we don't want to change any of that, but we want to add to the system by introducing spaceships, getting things off the ground. He said, well, yeah, what are you talking about? His car opened his suitcase up, took this little craft out, it was about 12 inches in diameter, set it on the rep's desk, and just let it sit there and continue to talk about it. He said, well, we want to put these up, take the wheel, put it horizontally, and everybody can have their homes that can move around, and they don't have to worry about anything because they can incorporate the same things they got on the ground in their spaceships. And the guy was saying, yeah, it's impossible and so forth. No, it's it's knowing things of the ethers, who we are and what we are. We have the power to do anything, and we just don't realize that we've been told otherwise. But our little group of people have stayed in the ethers to learn what we've learned, and we know who and what we are, and we know what the same about our brothers and sisters, and they can do the same thing. So at that, he said, well, how do these things operate? And they could look through. We had transparent skin around the craft, and there was no ignition switch, there was no steering wheel, there was no. It said, oh, that thing can't fly. And he said, no, it doesn't fly. It levitates and it teleports. It goes through and beyond this thing called time and space. And the guy was flipping out, and he's all, oh, man, you know, and at that time, Carr raised it off the ground using consciousness. We all concentrated on it, and it came off the ground about 6 inches up. And these engineers that he had with him, they started taking pictures, and they came over and said, you mind taking your jackets off? They thought we were remotely controlling this thing. Said, no, let's take a look. And I said, you want us to take our shoes off and everything? And they checked us all out for remotes, and they told the rep, well, it's working, but it can't work because it's in violation of all the known laws of physics. So, and then Carr went on to explain that he equated it to, I don't know if Carr did it at that time or not, but it's equated to, well, they've done it for years. They're operating now most of your big black ops are operated with just conscious control. You don't need steering gears anymore and stuff. And you can equate that back to, I think they made a movie called Firefox with, well, I know they did, with Clint Eastwood, where he had to go steal a jet from Russia and fly it just with his...
Well, I'll remember where you were, but let me tell you about an experience I had.
Okay, good.
Back in the, about 1990-91, my wife and I were living in American Fork, Utah, and... one night she sent me down to Fred Meyer, the big drugstore, to get something. And whenever I went out at night and came home, I'd always get out in the driveway and look toward the pole star, maybe say a little prayer. And this night, it ran through my head the thought, it says, turn around to the south and look up. Okay, so here... I'm going, okay, and there's no street lights on this street. About two blocks away, there was a ball game going on, so there was a little bit of light, but not much. But anyway, I saw what looked like, first I thought it was a bird flying, you know, because sometimes you see birds fly at night. And I thought, that's not a bird. It's perfectly round. It looks like a smoke-colored mirrored ball. And then all of a sudden, this, I'm not talking about 60 feet off the ground, 100 at the most. All of a sudden, this huge flying wing comes right over me. And you got to remember, I'm a trained observer. I've been an astronomer since I was 12 years old. And this thing, the wingspan was at least 100 feet, and it had two pipe nacelles, not on the tips of the wings, but about halfway in. And I just watched this thing pass over me in utter disbelief. And then... And that was one experience. And then the summer of 2009, I was getting ready to go to bed at was sleeping in an RV at my friend's house in Walsenburg, Colorado. And I kind of heard a rumble, and I looked up and I saw, I know what an aircraft looks like, but I saw a isosceles triangle shaped craft. It had didn't have the nav lights, you know, the green and the red nav lights. Instead, it had it had a red light on each corner. It had a light in the center on the belly, and then it had kind of an amorphous, not right on the tip of the triangle, kind of off to the side, kind of a. I could tell it was kind of a globe or something, and I reported this thing to MUFON, and the next day a guy told me, he says, it might be a new generation TR-3 of the TR-3B. Craft that our government operates. And the MUFON guys, you know, came out to the neighborhood, and we were afraid to answer the door that day. We didn't give the exact address. We just gave the street coordinates, but it made the local newspaper. But you know, I've seen UFOs on and off since I was 6 years old. When my family was moving to California, we left Northern Texas one night. Dad used to like to get up about 3 o'clock in the morning and be on the road by, you know, four. And mom and sister were asleep in the back seat, and I was in the front, you know, looking up through the windshield, and I saw this cigar-shaped craft with three ventral fins buzz us and just go out of sight. Dad felt it, you know, and the hair went up on the arms, all our arms, and the electrical system of the car momentarily kind of jumped. And he said, "What was that?" And I said, "I saw it, Dad." And I've had other experiences too. So it's just, but I understand the triangle ships are our own government ships.
All of them are, okay. And they're working with electromagnetism, and they can mount weapons on those. The craft that we, and in the interest of time, I'm going to jump ahead to tell
sure,
your audience, we're working on these things now. We've got what's called pods, just small groups of people that are with like minds working from the spirit to reintroduce free energy devices. And we want boxes and that we can give off to people. They can go anywhere and induce electricity. They don't need telephone poles and wires and things like that. And the Black Ops tried to, well, I'll jump ahead a little with my story and tell you what happened to us, and that's where a lot of our technology went. But it went without spirit. Without spirit, you can't do anything but live in the third dimension forever. You can't go to heaven. You can't even go to hell. Because you're already in it. No, I'm
yeah.
No, it's a beautiful place, but people put themselves there. They don't.
Right.
Well, anyway, so because I want to tell you about the consciousness, because that I know your audience is wondering, what are you talking about, and what I'm saying is the source of life itself lies within us. It's not outside of us. This is all really illusion out here, and we're creating it in microseconds. It doesn't really exist. And that's a hard one for people to wrap their heads around, because they say, what are you talking about? I'm touching my body right now. I know this is real. Yeah, it's real. In your mind, you have created a dense form of vibrations held together in sympathetic resonance with magnetism. And it is your creation that you're experiencing. You're reflecting who and what you are in a reality that was supposed to be fun, but you guys turned it into a mess. So you got to get yourself back out of it. So, this was proven to me when I was working in advanced kinetics. Down the line, the guy was on an electron microscope, and I used to have lunch with him. And one day we were talking about subjects like this, and he says, you know, I built this little jig. Come on over here and put your finger in it. So I went over and stuck my finger in this little jig, and he says, now look down the scope. And I looked down the scope where my finger was, and I didn't see anything. I just saw energy, just pure nothing but energy, just like you look at the stars, only they were all moving at incredible speed.
Really?
I pulled my finger out and stuck it back in, pulled it out. And he says, that's right, you're energy. You're nothing but energy. You're just producing this idea, this illusion of a denser reality. And it's not that you're going to ever lose it, because you're the creator of all. Your energy never dies. It's always been and it always will be, and that's what we all are. And so when Marcia's plaguing me, what is it?
Well, I want you to tell them how you actually teleported the craft.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
let me tell you.
That is very important, because it is done as an.
Okay. So anyway, if the audience wants to check it out, now they're operating all these Black Ops on they don't have steering gears, and they don't have ignition switches. It's all done with, well, they're still using diodes in some cases, but it's all done with impulses from the brain. But that's where it stays in the third dimension. They can't take those ships any further than our ionosphere. But getting back, if I haven't lost the audience yet, anyhow, getting back to where we were, Carr said, the guy said, well, he said, you guys are outlaws. What about, what's your power? And he says, it's magnetism. It's everywhere. You can take these things to the multiverse. The end is of the multiverse and never run out of fuel. There's, it's all energy, and we're using energy for our fuel. That's simple as that. And the guy's, you know, same thing that reflecting back to J.P. Morgan was saying, you know, well, you're gonna ruin us all. You're gonna have cars running on magnetic energy. That fuel company's not gonna like that. And Carver's trying to explain, this doesn't have to be a drastic thing. We can do this overnight, just slowly, just introduce these technologies and let the others be where they are. Nobody has to give up their Corvettes. But there's some of us that like to get spaceships. So, well, anyway, to get on, because Marshall wants me to tell you what happened. But he said, okay, I'll tell you guys. And he says, another thing, you're gonna turk off the insurance company when you say they can't crash. No, crashing is obsolete, and you can't have weapons on it. Yeah, these are run by love. And the guy says, oh, bull. You guys put them up. You guys are outlaws. And he ran us off. He said, you guys get out of here. And you guys put them up, we'll shoot them down. That's what he told us. That's the exact words. So Carr says, thank you very much. Bye. Come on, boys. We better. They're on to us now. They're going to blow our cover die high. We better get back.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells. Yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed, because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. Simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
At www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
We had a couple of 45-foot crafts that we're working on. We had one that was just, it was ready to go. We just had to do a little touch-up on it and some minor readjustments. But Carr said we're going to take the 45-footer, and he, by honor, elected me, and I'm just a lab tech, with two brilliant engineers to be one of the people that got on board. And I was really humbled. I thought, well, man, that's great. And he already explained. He says, now remember what I told you. Let your mind do the work, not your brain, because your brain will say it can't happen, it doesn't exist, it won't work. But your mind knows there's nothing impossible. So go in, sit down, shut up, and focus on the crystal, the giant crystal in the front, in the center of the craft. We're up in the cabin, and underneath that was a bright laser light that came up through the bottom. I say laser, I'm not sure what it was, but it was brilliant like a laser. And we were working on lasers in the lab, so it looked familiar to me. But it lit this crystal up in millions of colors. I mean, like from infrared all the way around to ultraviolet. It was just thousands and thousands of different shades of red and yellows and greens and blues. And then it started changing to the color of aquamarine. And what had happened, we'd learned this later, that the engineers had gone downrange about 10 miles a couple of days before and measured the field down there that we were going to take this craft to as equating to the light spectrum color of aquamarine. And he said, just go in and relax. Take all the trash out of your brain. Don't think of anything, because if you think, you're going to slow things down. Just relax. So we went in, and pretty soon this color turned into this outstandingly beautiful aquamarine. It was just, and the whole ship on the inside was aquamarine. Just really a beautiful color. And we felt really good. And we were told later it reached the Schumann frequency of the Earth spin, which is 8.7 or 8 hertz, you know, per second. And when you reach that resonant frequency, you do feel excellently good because you're in tune with Mom, with Mother Earth. So anyway, and then before we knew it, he said, okay, that's it, boys. Come on down for debriefing. And we looked at each other and we didn't go anywhere. We didn't do nothing. They concurred, yeah, that's right, we didn't do nothing, man. I don't know, something must have gone wrong. We better go down and see what's going on. And we were sealed in the cabin. Nobody came on board, and we were, for the most part, our minds were wide awake. Our brain was probably loafing somewhere, but our minds were really keenly aware of what was going on. So we went down and went into Carr's office, and he said, well, how'd it go, boys? We didn't go anywhere, did it? Was something go wrong or what? And we had these jumpsuits on, little jumpsuits. We cleaned up before we went on board and put these jumpsuits on. And we said, well, we didn't do anything. And he says, oh, you didn't? No, we didn't. And he says, well, empty your pockets. Well, we knew we didn't have anything in our pockets. We went up there with nothing in our pockets, and nobody got on board. But all of a sudden, we were emptying out stones and sticks and grass and all kinds of stuff and putting them on top of his desk. And he says, oh, really? Well, where did that come from? Tell me. And we had no idea. We thought, whoa, what is going on? He said, well, I told you boys about consciousness. The mind is in control of this, not the brain. The brain doesn't know anything about the ethers. It knows about atmosphere and stratosphere and ionosphere. It doesn't know anything about, very little about the ethers, except for the people like Tesla and Moray and Schomburger and a few others that have dared to enter the realms of the ethers and bring the knowledge forth to free mankind from the servitude that it's been in for a long time. So anyway, we said, well, how exactly did that happen? He said, well, you went beyond. You went outside of time and space. Time and space doesn't really exist where you, in the ethers. It exists in dimensions like you're inhabiting here in your experience as a human body, but it's measurement. Point A to point B, you measure it, and that's it. That's the fourth dimension, the time and space. But where you jump to with the fifth dimension or beyond, that's, these are words put on ideas, and you can define them any way you want, but that's what he was saying to us. And so the brain you quieted yourself down well enough to successfully, you know, teleport through time and space. And what you did, you went downrange, and your brain will deny this forever if you let it, but you're going to have to educate your brain someday and start realizing through the mind that all these things happen. And it may take weeks, months, or years. And now I've got almost total recall of it. I remember almost every detail. But later on when I was doing this interview for Project Camelot, a police officer from Apple Valley sent an email to us, and he said, I saw you on Project Camelot. He said, you know, I think we've seen you guys. Did you have jumpsuits on? I said, yeah. And he said, well, we were out on patrol, and we saw your craft come in. It was bright blue, and then it came down and set for just a few minutes. Three men got out and fooled around for a few minutes before we could get over there. The whole thing